Two, maybe a little bit.
I'll let you out early today. It's
been a long, long week, so I'll get you out a little bit early today. Okay, so there's an interesting moment of tequila that flies a little bit under the radar. If you're not careful, you don't notice it. Some very interesting ideas about tefila that it exposes. Hagar is in the desert, and Hagar is suffering. She's suffering physically. It's hot. She's got no water. She's suffering, obviously, psychologically for the mistreatment she receives at the hands of Sarah. And all of a sudden, she's visited by Melachim, which is important because it demonstrates that two things. Number one, that Avram's house was a scene of Melachim, and she's not overwhelmed by it, and she's not frightened by it. Remember how Shimshon's parents, when they encounter the Malachim and Sefer Shoftim, they think they're going to die, they're terrified, the world's ending. But for Hagar, it's a normal occurrence. And we sense this in Parshas Vayera, that the Malachim frequent Avram's home, so she's not overwhelmed by it. And of course, what's also important is that Avram's religious nature is spreading even to the secondary associates in his house. So you feel Avram's influence. And sometimes if you want to really know the true measure of a person, you look at the children, you look at the people in their home, and they pick up. And sometimes, actually, in today's world, where you very interesting, where you have people who are living to advanced ages and need help and support. So at least in Israel, very often the people who support them are not Jewish. They're not from. We have a lot of people from the Philippines, people from Sri Lanka, people from different places. And it's interesting to see the relationships that are built between, like if Tavori was Nifter, and a lot of, he had a very, very deep relationship with the person who was his caretaker, as did Rav Lichtenstein. In fact, the caretaker told me an interesting story, that at one point there was a group of girls that came to visit Rav Tavori from one of the seminaries. So he had already planned this with his caretaker beforehand. The girls were asking a question. He couldn't get up. He couldn't walk. So he turned to his Sri Lankan caretaker. He said his name was Rakesh, or I forget the guy's name. He said, please bring me a shagasarie. So he went to the room, brought him the shagasarie, and he taught the girls. They thought that this Sri Lankan worker knew the shagasarie had been planted beforehand. But in any event, so this is what you're seeing in Hagar. But what's also interesting is the naming. She's told that she's going to have a child, and that the name of the child should be Yishmael. Why will the child's name be Yishmael? Hinach haravi alatid ben, v'karashmo Yishmael, ki shama Hashem elanyech. Because Hashem heard your tefillos. So your son should be Yishmael. Hashem heard Yishmael. Hashem heard your voice. Very interesting. The first time that a human being is given a direct, clear sense that Hashem listens to tefillah, Yishmael, of all people. Now, there are two parts that are fascinating to this little interchange. First of all, I don't see Hagar davening. I see Hagar wandering, and she's in the desert. She's probably suffering, although we don't see her suffering, but we can connect the dots. She's suffering, she's hungry, she's thirsty, she's been expelled by the family. She meets this malach, and the malach sends her back. But she never davens. Yet, ki shama Hashem elanyech, Hashem heard your voice and your suffering. So I think the answer is that there's a part of tefillah, and we should be conscious of it, of our tefillah, that we want Hashem not just to respond to our tefillos when we stand in front of Him in our Shemona Esrei, with our siddur open and our tefillin on, standing and davening to Hashem directly, but we suffer a lot in life. And as life, as you heard yesterday, as life gets more complicated, sometimes it's suffer, sometimes it's struggle, sometimes it's frustration, sometimes it's sadness, sometimes it's real issues, more, not that those aren't real. And we want HaKadosh Baruch Hu to hear that also. And even if we aren't able to sometimes even articulate our suffering, sometimes if we aren't able to ask for help, we're unable to see resolution, we aren't able to translate into formal tefillah, there's something called the silent tefillah that's part of life. When we recite Vani Tefila Si Lecha Hashem Eis Ratzon, it doesn't say Vani Mispalel Lecha Hashem Eis Ratzon. Ani Tefila Si, I want my life to be a tefila. So part of my tefila is cohate and coherent and articulate, and I'm aware of it, and I say, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, I have this need and that need. And part of it is just, I go through so much, and I'm not even sure what I'm going through, but it takes its toll, and it's frustrating to me. And Hashem, can you hear that? Can you respond to that? Can you, you know, give me some time off or time served? Because, you know, even if I deserve some onesh, I've already received so much hardship, and that hardship should count also. So when we think about our tefillos and we stand in front of our Kodesh Baruch Hu, it's not just, it's now 3:10, what are my needs right now that I can list off and rifle off to our Kodesh Baruch Hu? We say, Kodesh Baruch Hu, I'm going through a lot, and I may not even be able to understand what I'm going through. Certainly at younger ages, it's hard to understand, but I know there's a lot of turbulence and a lot of frustration, and I want you to hear my voice, like you heard Hagar's voice. We didn't even, there's no articulated feeling. She doesn't say anything. The second issue is, if we could go back in time and root for whether Hashem should listen to Hagar's tefillah, I know what I'm rooting for. I know that I'm rooting, no, please don't. Please don't deliver a son named Yishmael. Please, this Yishmael is going to torture humanity in so many millennia. Obviously, Islam is not just torturing humanity because there's so many other parts of Islam, but certainly the Pasuk describes the future. Hu yeper adam, wild, barbaric, yado bakol, a lot of wars, a lot of bloodshed, al pnei kol achav yishkon. Sadly, not just there will be attacks on other nations, but internally there will be a lot of strife, al pnei kol achav yishkon. There's going to be a lot of internal struggle in the Islamic world. And sadly enough, I mean, just at the very fundamental level, Shiites and Sunnis are at each other's throats, except when it comes to Israel. Hamas is all too happy to collaborate with Iran. Iran is Shiite, Hamas is Sunni, but they're all happy to collaborate. But how much bloodshed has been wrought by the hand of Islam throughout history, both in its wars with Europe, its wars with Christendom, as well as in its internal struggle? I mean, every time I see another Islamic state falling, I think of this pasuk, and I'm sad, I'm not happy, I'm not triumphant. Think about the people who are homeless in Syria, people who are stateless across the Islamic world, and they can't develop. It's so hard for that culture to develop because of the tribal nature, I'm not a demographer, I'm not a historian, but for so many factors, it just seems to be a consistent roadblock in the Islamic world to build successful, durable states. So maybe this isn't a wise decision to reward Hagar and to deliver a son who's going to be responsible for so much misery. So again, there's a second part to this equation. Suddenly, there are many centuries Islam advanced human society and culture and math, so I certainly don't want to present it in a simplistic, one-sided fashion. But the point is as follows. And to understand this point, you have to turn to Parshas Vayera. Because in Parshas Vayera, Hashem doesn't just respond to Hagar, Hashem responds to Yishmael. They're both suffering in the desert. And we read this every year on Rosh Hashanah. It's a very, very important Rosh Hashanah phrase, as well as a general phrase. Hashem answers Yishmael, Basher Husham. Very important phrase, Basher Husham. Meaning right now, this isn't Islam, this isn't Crusaders, this isn't attacking Budapest or attacking Romania. This is simply a baby and a mother in a desert. And the baby and the mother in the desert right now are innocent. And the baby and the mother in the desert need Hashem's mercy. And Hashem responds, Basher Husham, in your current state. Even though Kodesh Baruch Hu knows the future fully well, Kodesh Baruch Hu does not take the future into account and calculate the future when he responds to the immediate need. And it's important in the way that we treat other people, and it's also important in the way that we treat ourselves in our relationship with Hashem. Let me give you an example. A person comes to your door. They need something. You could start asking yourself, well, does your lifestyle perpetuate this need? Maybe you should have a different approach to life. Maybe you should get a job. Maybe you shouldn't be so fiscally irresponsible. Right? So I'm a member of Lichtenstein. We used to have aniyim lining up outside. You could walk, you could identify Rav Aaron's house by the aniyim outside the house. And there were stories that I was told that certain charedim, and they repeat performers, you get the same people coming back. And sadly, one of the hard parts of living in the charedi world is that some people are really condemned to a life of schnorring and to a life of begging because it's built into the community. And at a certain point, Rav Chassid would sit down with some of the aniyim and offer them kind advice and just say, your wife's been sick for 10, 15 years. You're constantly collecting. Maybe it's time to get a job. So the truth is, older people sometimes respond and say, I really can't. I've tried to work. Sometimes younger firebrands, what do you mean, getting a job? I should be learning. Everything else is bittul Torah. And they would retort to Rav Lichtenstein, not knowing who he was. He was just offering kind advice. And they wouldn't know that this is one of the Gedolei Hador that you're trying to argue with. And Rav Aaron never retaliated. He wasn't a retaliator. People said things about him. One of the traits I most admired about Rav Aaron is, again, today, some of these big ideological debates have died down, but in the 80s and the 90s, really debates, Rav Lichtenstein, right wing, left wing, that never felt the need to retaliate when people said things about him. And he didn't retaliate to these people. And at a certain point, and then the conversation would end, and he'd write them lavish checks. I mean, they constantly come back because he'd write, even though they disagreed. So you can disagree with a person's lifestyle, but they need you right now. And you can't condition your ability to extend yourself based on whether it's his fault or not his fault. They did act responsible. They did act. Chesed can't be conditional. Now, again, if someone comes to your door, as there are people that come to my door who are clearly on drugs or clearly, you know, a little bit alcohol inebriated, so your money isn't really serving any purpose. Your money is just perpetuating these nasty and bad habits. So that you shouldn't give your money. And for the same token, if someone comes to your door and you feel that they're not leading a responsible life and it's their fault, and so maybe you don't give them that much money. You want to give money to people that will use it better or to organizations that are more ideologically aligned with you, that's for sure. But you can't condition any time in life and you keep it avayim and your chesed, well, does a person deserve my chesed? It has to be more instinctive. It has to be more of a virtuous, noble response. As a person in need, I'm shutting down all judgments and trying to serve. Again, you can qualify your chesed. I'll perform chesed for people that I think deserve it more chesed. I'll deliver more funds. But you can't deny chesed and staka and treatment because the person does it. The person should have known better. The parent should have raised their kids better. Or that person should. The nature of chesed is you help people out in the moment. And the same is true with our davening. One of the great traps of religion is the hypocrisy crucible. You say, wait a second, I'm sitting in front of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, I'm asking for so many things, and right now, I'm really sincere. If you stop the clock right now, but everyone, I know that I've got my flaws, I've got my failures, sometimes their habits repeat themselves, and maybe in a few hours, I'll commit some action that doesn't justify what I ask HaKadosh Baruch Hu now. Even at the very least, I know my religious passions are going to ebb. I'm not going to be the same person in 6 years. Or I'm standing in front of HaKadosh Baruch Hu and Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur, and I know the next year I'm going to be the same person. I'll be right back there asking for the same. So I feel like a hypocrite. I don't want to feel like a hypocrite. I'd rather be honest, and therefore I shouldn't even ask. I shouldn't even bother. One of the most haunting memories I have of this crucible that some people fall into is I remember I was at some panel conversation once, and a person raised his hand and actually said, Rabbi, what do you think is better? A hypocritical modern Orthodox person who just goes through the motions, performs the mitzvahs, but lifestyle doesn't necessarily match. I don't mean hypocritical that at night they're a rapist or a chainsaw murderer. I'm just mean, you know, like many people. Or someone who's honest and authentic, and I'm not going to be honest and authentic, but doesn't perform mitzvahs. And basically they're asking me to rank honesty versus orthopraxy. And I'm saying, of course it's the orthopraxy person, because honesty is not all or nothing. It's not binary. It's a spectrum. I mean, you try your best in life to get towards honesty and honesty and authenticity. Some of more, some of less. Obviously, when it's wildly discrepant, then that's hypocrisy. That's people who are manipulative. That's people who are two-faced. But we all have different parts of us, and we all try as best as we can to condense the two and to integrate ourselves. But mitzvahs are mitzvahs. Mitzvahs and averus, that is binary. You perform a mitzvah, you don't perform a mitzvah. So you're in, you buy in, and then you try as best as possible to bring your honesty and authenticity into tow, to let it reflect your life. And today, I hate to say, I followed up on that person. That person's not firm today. No surprise. So we stand in front of our Kodesh Baruch Hu. How do we deal with the sense that Kodesh Baruch Hu right now it means, but my behavior may not back it up. I mean, really, really dig deep into yourself. Kodesh Baruch Hu, I know that I'm not going to live up to all of my passion right now. And the answer is Hashem doesn't take that into account. Hashem looks at you right now. Right now, 3:10, you're davening. 7:15, you're davening. You're in a mode. You're in a moment. If you could lock that moment in and let it dictate how you'd behave, you would. Human beings are frail. Human nature is frail. Hashem judges you the same way he judges Yishmael. Kadosh Baruch Hu answered Yishmael as a little baby who was crying out in the desert. That baby needs help, needs succor. So Hashem answers you the same fashion. Those are two ideas you can draw from Hagar's davening. It's a very quiet davening. You don't even see it. Number one, she doesn't say anything, but Hashem hears her voice and hears her suffering and responds to it. And the second issue is that Hashem doesn't judge Yishmael based on the future. That will happen. HaKadosh Baruch Hu saves a baby. HaKadosh Baruch Hu saves a baby. And we have to be capable of the same chesed and also to see HaKadosh Baruch Hu's treatment of us in a similar light. Okay? Okay. Now we're going to up the ante from